Okay, so what is a Seder and what is a Haggadah? So the root of the word Haggadah means telling. What are we telling? What do we tell? We're telling what story? Telling the story of the Exodus on this night. That's what we are telling. So a Seder just means order. So this is probably an exaggeration, but probably not a huge exaggeration. A million different Haggadahs out there. If you have ever been to a really big, like gone to New York where you have a huge Jewish bookstore, you have seen just rows and rows, what's it called? Shelves and shelves, that's what I mean to say. Shelves and shelves, and rows of Haggadahs for every possible occasion. But a Haggadah is really just kind of a cheat sheet. Because really what Seder night is supposed to be is the telling, the talking, the stories, the discussion. Reading out of a book should be sort of ideally a bare minimum of what you do on Seder night. That mostly what it should be is engaging you and your guests in talking about the themes and the story in a way that is relevant to you. So that is our major theme. I want to point out I was going to bring my laser pointer and I forgot. I don't know what that Hamilton Haggadah is. I don't know if that's even a real thing, but I guess it has music parodies in it. I don't know. But A Different Night is my favorite Haggadah. That's the one I always use because it has lots of commentary in it, lots of activities in it. It's just full of things you could do it, you know, do a different Seder every year. It's a great volume. One thing that some people do is give their guests all different Haggadahs with different commentary in it, and then you can get to your, when because every Haggadah is the same order, right? Seder means order. There's 15 steps of a Seder, regardless of what Haggadah to use 15 steps to the Seder. So you look at each part and someone will say, oh, here's an interesting little thing in mine that I want to share. And that's a nice way to do a Seder is everyone kind of shares what they have in front of them. So there are many themes of Passover. You can't possibly go into depth. Some of you have probably at some point in your life gone to a Seder that went to like 2 or 3 in the morning. Maybe you went to a Chabad Seder or, you know, whatever. You've been to somebody's house where the Seder, you know, went half the night. And that's not always everybody's favorite thing to do. But if a Seder is really engaging and it's really interactive and it's all about discussion about things that you feel are really pertinent, you know, you can have a Seder for a few hours and it goes by pretty quickly. So here are just some of the themes that are in the Haggadah, that are in the telling, that are part of the holiday. And, you know, there's probably going to be one or two. So I'm going to ask you, you know, which one kind of jumps out at you? And it won't be necessarily the same every year. One is, what does it mean to be free? And what does it mean to be a slave? Those are big open questions. You know, freedom from what? Enslaved to what? Spring is here, sort of. That's why I said coming with question mark. We're hoping on next Friday we're going to have some spring here. Rebirth and renewal, the egg, you know, there's different symbols. The symbol of spring, things coming back to life. Hope. There are 4 different statements in Exodus 6, promises that God is going to save us. So is 4 a number that sounds familiar for Passover Seder? What do you have? 4 questions? 4 wine cups? 4 children or sons? 4 is a popular number. And that's what it relates to. Hospitality, being open and welcoming. We say at the Seder, let us open our door. Anyone who is in need, please come. We say open the door to those who are in physical need, and we say open to the door to those who are in need of community, that may be people who are not in physical need, but are in emotional need, in need for company. We care about all those people. Elijah, we open the door for Elijah. This is a big theme of Seder. We welcome the stranger. Being grateful for our blessings in Dayenu. If only we had one of our blessings as a people, it would have been enough, right? Dayenu means it would have been enough. Here's a theme that you may not think of with Seder because it's not super emphasized, but what do we do at the plagues? The plagues, what ritual do we do when we mention each of the plagues? Yep. We take some wine out of our cup. What does wine represent in Judaism? Joy, so we are decreasing our joy, even though we are so happy that we are let out of Egypt. We know Egyptians had to suffer for us to get out, and so we are reducing our joy because they had to suffer even though they were our oppressors. So of these themes, are there any that really resonate with you, and maybe they resonate with you more this year than other years? Anyone want to share maybe at your Seder something you especially want to make sure you highlight because it's important to you? You can just raise your hand. Gary?
Well, the welcoming the stranger part, the hospitality part, every year I invite someone that's never been to a Seder before. It's kind of a theme that we always do, and it's a teachable moment, and plus it's just fun.
It is.
Yeah.
And a lot of people invite non-Jews to their Seder. That's a popular custom that people have, and again, welcoming and letting people know, you know, here's this great thing that Jews do and be part of it. Any other of these themes that kind of speak to you in some way that you want to make sure the kids can talk to? It's a quiet crowd. Okay. I made sure to wear my flats tonight. I did not make the same mistake I did last time.
So I didn't think about this for Seder before, but I like to see hope up there because I think a lot of us are in need of that right now.
So remembering that things can seem dark, but there is hope.
For our family, it's Exodus. Because we've been there. It's very personal, and we invite always strangers. Our neighbors know that they can come to our house for Seder or sharing.
So I am skipping ahead to my last slide by saying this, but it is part of the mitzvah to make this story your story. So telling your own story at Seder is definitely part of... Oh, and I want to mention one thing. It's always good to have some tzedakah given at the beginning, because one of the things we talk about enslavement is people enslaved by poverty, and that's a nice tie-in to contributing, especially at the Seder when we talk about we want to be open to those in need. So you may have been confused, I know I have in the past, that we hold up the matzah at one point and we say, this is a symbol of hope that we were freed. And then at another time we hold up the matzah and we say, this is the bread of affliction. And it's like, wait, what? Like, is this good or bad? Like, what is it? But if you notice at Seder, there's a lot of things like that. There are a lot of things that seem very much in opposition to each other, but they are living together. It's a Seder that's a yes and. Seder is yes and not no but. It is very inclusive. I had a professor once who said that is the characteristic of Jewish thinking from other different thinking at the time of the rabbis, the yes and, that we can live in tension between things that don't seem to go together, that are opposite, and we can hold them both, because that is what life is about. Life is always much more complicated. So matzah is the bread of hope, and it's the bread of affliction. It reminds us that we got out of Egypt, but it also reminds us of the hardship we had to get there, and also, you know, we break it, the brokenness that still is in the world. We're thankful for our freedom, so that is happy, but we also recognize not everyone is free, and we have to think of them. We are rejoiced at being freed from our oppressors, and yet we decrease our joy because they had to suffer. It never made sense to me. Haroset, or Harosis, as I grew up calling it, which is very sweet, right? If you're Ashkenazi, it's made up of apples and wine and cinnamon and whatever else you throw in there. Nuts, walnuts usually. There's all different kinds of harosa, but that's kind of basic Ashkenazi, and it's very, very sweet and yummy, and everyone likes it. And then you're told, oh, this is the mortar that they used to build, the slaves had to build with. I'm like, well, that doesn't really go. because this is like yummy, everyone's liking to eat it. Like, that doesn't make much sense to me. And then we take the spring symbol, which is often parsley. So spring is the rebirth and the happiness. And then we dip it in, what do we dip it in? We dip it in salt water, we dip it in tears. So what's that about? And there's so much of this that goes on. And I read something interesting about how freedom also is freedom of thought. That this may represent the fact, and especially as we live in a society that many of us are thinking is getting more polarized, that opposites can coexist on the same table, in the same ceremony, that this is part of life, that opposites can blend together in a positive way. It may be something you might want to talk about at your Seder table. You know, opposites are here at our Seder, and how do people who are opposites, you know, what do they maybe have to offer each other? So, seeing both sides. Creativity is the name of the game. It is not a brand new thing that the Reform movement did to say, let's do creative stuff at our Seder. This is ancient, ancient idea about what Seder's supposed to be. So the traditional Haggadah says the more and the longer one expands and embellishes the story, the more commendable you are. So not only are you supposed to go longer, but all kinds of creative embellishments and things you want to overlay. Maybe your family is very into talking about personal things. Maybe you're into talking about political things. Maybe you're interested in talking about spiritual things. Whatever it is, however, whatever you add to it, that's part of it. I think this is very interesting. So the Seder is a lot about teaching our children, and they understood a lot of things about education that we know today, about how to engage and how to get questions asked. And this was kind of interesting. There was a rule from the early rabbis that said, everyone is obligated to drink 4 cups of wine. Men, women, and children. And my parents told me when I was 3, my mom forgot to buy juice, so they gave me wine, and I kept running around the dining room table laughing and falling down. So I don't remember, but I don't know how I felt the next day either. So Rabbi Yehuda said, what good is wine for children? Give them popcorn and peanuts. Now, I will point out popcorn and peanuts for Ashkenazi Jews today are not kosher for Passover, but they weren't concerned. That was way before this. Rabbi Yehuda said, what good is wine for children? Give them popcorn and peanuts to keep them from falling asleep. Get them to ask questions. So maybe your kids will have, you know, a cup full of Passover candy instead of a cup full of wine. This creativity, this idea that it's supposed to be a night where everything is different and creative and you're coming up with innovative things, is old as the hills. So this is not a new idea. The set. Okay, so pointing out some things. So one thing that you could do if you're having a Seder at your home and you're not having that many people is you could do, most of the service is before the meal. You do obviously have a little bit after the meal, but there's not that much. I've had Seder where everyone sits around the living room and does the Seder part just sitting on the couches and on just the comfortable chairs and does the Seder there and then goes to the dining room when the meal is served. And sometimes that's just a nice setting that sets the tone for conversation. That's something you might want to do. So the set, so this is supposed to be a tent. I actually had a couple people who couldn't come tonight who had pup tents. So this is my version of a tent. I've seen, you know, been at Seders where they decorate. So we have our Red Sea here. And we have our pyramids. Obviously, you need no artistic ability to decorate your own Seder. You know, I've seen just, you know, people can dress up. They can put on, you know, desert hat wear. So I found some slides from Pinterest and other places of things, you know, especially if you have kids, you know, give them something to do before it starts. We have a little pyramid set up there. I thought this was a cute table. You notice everyone has plagues by there. It looks like the little marshmallows are hail, and the glasses for the darkness, and they have different plagues by their plates. These are red peppers, red and green peppers. And I'm not sure what the eyes are made of, but that is someone who's more talented than I am, probably. I loved all of these. You know, they can, little centerpieces. I like the flower holder a lot. And the house. Good use of matzah, yes. Little Lego people going through the Red Sea. There's another great table. All the Lego people passing through. So each side of the table is like the sea with the fish. So these are just ideas. I'm sparking ideas. So it's up to you guys. You have a week now to get yourselves together here. I love that cake, that Passover cake. Again, the splitting of the sea. And just a table with different animals and pyramid and so. So I want to point out that very early on in the Seder, you do the blessing for karpas. So does that sound familiar, karpas? What usually do we use for karpas? Parsley. Once you say the blessing for parsley, which is the blessing for things that grow under the ground, berei pri ha'adama, you have now blessed anything that grows under the ground. So this is a good time to bring out platters of vegetables because your guests get hungry and they start eating the matzah, and that drives me crazy. It's not time for the matzah. We haven't done a matzah. Like, get your mouth away from the matzah. So instead, very early on, we do that karpas. It's like the third thing that you do. And at that point, you can bring out potatoes, you know, sweet and regular potatoes that are boiled and cut up. You can, you know, anything that grows under the ground, you can put a dip out and then they can munch and they can do it kosherly because they've said the blessing. So that just takes care of one of my little pet peeves. Okay. So we know about the four questions. We teach our children in the school. The four questions. The four questions are not really four questions. It's a potential opening question or statement and then four statements. So they're kind of misleading. But really, this is one of the parts of the Seder that's put in there because what you're supposed to do at this point is the kids are supposed to ask questions. So what do you think happened 2,000 years ago when the parents said to the kids, okay, kids, what questions do you have about tonight? What do you think the kids did? Yeah, I don't know. Looking down, getting the popcorn that's sitting on the table. So children were exactly the same 2,000 years ago as now. So that's why questions were starting to be provided, because kids didn't know what to ask. So that's why we have questions provided. But you don't have to. You can, there's other ways to provoke questions. It is nice for the kids to know Manishtana Halayla Hazeh. It's a tradition. It's good for them to know it and ask it. But real questions are part of it. So here are some. So one thing you can do is like what I did when you walked in. I said, what would be an interesting question to discuss? And you can have your guests do that when they come in and just stick them in a bowl. I've done this. And then sort of at random parts in the Seder, just pull them out and have a discussion. So here's some of your questions. How does the Exodus Passover story relate to Israelis as they are in the Promised Land? Good question. What is your favorite Passover Seder memory? So that's a good discussion. Why did Aaron and Miriam just go along with Moses after he came back to Egypt? So you could discuss, these are all good questions because they're all so different, and that's what you want. So this might be a more psychological question of what was the dynamic. Here are these people who grew up in slavery, and their brother who lived this privileged life comes back and is like, oh, we're going to do this. And, you know, what do you think their response would be? So that's a very psychological question. Why do we celebrate Passover so many weeks after the Exodus story is read in the Torah? Well, that's because we read the Torah in chronological order, and that's just how it comes. But people wonder, I get that question every single year. Can't quite read that one. What do you see as the most challenging thing facing Jewish teens today? This would be a great question, especially if you have teens at your Seder. That would be a wonderful question. I think that was it. What's your favorite part of the Seder? How did Moses get 1.6 million Jews to move so fast when they left? Yeah, that's a good question. Okay, so those are the questions. But you know, you can see if you let your guests just write down questions, you're going to get a whole range of things. You might get. Let me ask you. This is an interesting question. Is there any part of the Seder that troubles you? Is there any part of the Seder that when you get to it and you read it, you kind of think, I'm a little uncomfortable with this, or I'm not sure about this?
The part with the four sons when they talk about the wicked son.
Okay.
As somebody who works with kids, I have trouble thinking of kids being wicked.
Okay. I think you are not alone in that. I often actually skip that part because I don't think it offers enough. I think other parts of, you can't do everything, you know, so I feel like some parts offer more than other parts. That part has somehow really caught on with people, and I'm not sure why. I've seen that interpreted in different Haggadahs as like the one who challenges the one, like just in different language. Is there anything else that makes anyone maybe uncomfortable about Seder or what we do with Seder or things that we read?
The slaying of the firstborn.
Mm-hmm. The plagues can be very touchy. And I'll tell you, I have struggled with, we have many songs for kids. For some reason, that is the part of the Seder. And I'm still processing this. It's going to take me a while because I've been thinking about this for at least a couple of years. Of all the parts of the Seder, the one that seems the most sort of really engaging with the kids are the plagues, which is arguably the most problematic part of the Seder. So we have froggy songs, we have plague songs, we have cute plague things. Look at this table. There are so many cute plague things here. I got these plague bowling pins that I love. So it's each one is a different plague. So there's the blood and there's the frogs, and you set them up and you bowl. All right, I didn't do that well. I got two, but you can bowl them at your Seder. So it's an interesting question what we do with this. So I'll tell you what I've done, what I'm currently doing with them, but it's something I'm still processing. First of all, I think it would be good if someone would write more children's songs about other parts of the Seder besides the plague. I mean, how many kids do not like doing the frog song? Frogs here, frogs there, frogs are whatever, everywhere, jumping, yeah. So, you know, can we come up with maybe songs that are just as engaging at other parts? What I do with the kids' Seders is I often say, we're going to first do them in a sort of a jovial kind of way, except for the slaying of the firstborn, which I can't make a joke of that one. And then we're going to do it when we take the wine out and I talk about how we're not happy about it. So that's kind of how I've come to terms with it, is doing it sort of in the fun way, but then following it up with the understanding that these were things that caused people to suffer. Jerry, did you have something to add?
There wasn't a particularly specific part of the Seder that was problematic, but in terms of trying to make a Seder our own, what we did, I don't know, 10 or 12 years ago, was I didn't buy every single Haggadah on the shelf, but I bought a lot of Haggadahs, and we now have our own Haggadah basically made up of this little of this and a little of that and a little of something else, and that's how we sort of dealt with that problem.
Yeah, that's great. So one way to get kids to ask questions is I sometimes carry around these Hebrew bazooka Joes and say, if you ask a good question, and of course you're not, you know, the meal's not coming for a while, you know, you get this or maybe a kosher for Passover. So Owen, do you have a good question about Passover? About the Seder? But what happens at the Seder, right? You guys just had the model Seder. No? No? Can't think of anything? Zachary? How did Moses lead all out of fear? Guess what? You get a Bazooka Joe. Don't open it in the sanctuary. Because I don't want to get fired. Yes.
How did Moses make the sea red?
Oh, that's a good question. So I'm not going to answer. I'm just going to give you some gum. It's a Bazooka Joe. Anyone else have a question? Yes, Owen.
How did the frogs get on Pharaoh's head when he got up?
Oh, good question. There you go. Wait till after services. Josh, suddenly, you notice how suddenly we're getting a lot of questions? Yes, Joshua.
Why do we eat macaroons at the Seder?
Okay, there you go.
How were the plagues chosen?
Oh, excellent question. Okay, so you get the idea. That's another thing you can do. Give rewards that are food-oriented for asking good questions or making good statements. And so for the part of the plagues that are fun, there are so many different things you can do. You've probably all seen these plagues bags. There are all kinds of puppets that you can use. We have a ton of them here if you want to borrow a set for each of the plagues. We have things like hail. Yeah, got your attention there. Here's some frogs. They jump, not very well, but they're very cheap. There we go. And let's see, cattle disease. And some good flies. What? Flies. You get a fly. Some other basic ideas, using other cultures' practices. In Morocco, when the middle matzah is broken, they break it into a hay, or maybe you have a contest to see who can make the best letter hay, because that's part of God's name. You're probably familiar with, this is wrapped up in plastic. During Dayenu in Afghanistan, when they sing Dayenu, they whip each other. Die, Dayenu, die, Dayenu, die, Dayenu, Dayenu, Dayenu. Okay, there you go. So you can have a bunch of scallions out at your table for that. 4 cups of wine, we are free. We recline when we drink our wine because that is how, in the rabbi's time, the wealthy and luxurious dined. They were stretched on couches. But today, that might not be our idea of living a life of luxury. So what might you think of as your place of, like, the most amazing place you can think of where you're living a life of luxury? What do you think, Zachary? Living in a house as a millionaire. What about you, Caitlin? You have any idea on that? What?
Living in Jerusalem.
Ooh. So we're going to get to that, the last thing. So, and since it's getting so late, I am going to wrap this up. This I'll just mention that Seder plate, you can see some things on here that are maybe unconventional on the Seder plate. The orange is sometimes on there to represent the fact that not everybody who is not everyone feels included in the Jewish people, but everyone is. An orange belongs on a Seder plate, just like every Jew, regardless of who they are, belongs as part of the Jewish people. The beet is not a newfangled vegetarian option. It goes back to after the temple was destroyed, Rabbi Akiva, I believe it was, said we should not have a shank bone. You cannot bring sacrifices anymore, so it's inappropriate to have lamb here as if it was the temple. So that he replaced with a beet. But people today who are vegetarian use that traditional option too, if they do not want to have a bone on their plate. And I'm skipping ahead just because I'm looking at the time. Remember that in each generation, each person's obligated to see yourself as though you personally came forth from Egypt. So these were just a few scattering of ideas. How will you make your Seder your story? That's the point of it. How will you make this story your story? How will you make it your guest story? Your job is just to make your Seder your own. There's no wrong Seder. You make it applicable and relevant and fun for you and your guests. So a very Zisen Pesach, as they used to say, a very sweet Pesach. And